From New York City, this is Comic News Insider, your podcast for everything comic book, animation, sci-fi, and pop culture. Brought to you by Dynamic Forces, the comic industry's leader in pop entertainment and collectibles. Here are your hosts, Jimmy Aquino and Joe Gonzalez.
Episode 404. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jimmy Aquino, and I am still in London. I've got hours to find a way to stay, but if not, my flight leaves at 8 p.m. I'm at the Self-Made Hero offices, the swanky Self-Made Hero offices. Old listeners, loyal listeners know I've talked about Self-Made Hero a lot. There's a lot of great creators coming out of there. On episode 400, the awesome publisher Emma Haley was on there, and she's here again. Hi, Emma.
Hi, Jimmy.
She's
Hi.
Back. I've invaded their office space, and I need to take some pictures if that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like an old, what style housing is this? Like a Tudor mansion?
No, well, it's kind of Georgian. So, yeah, so it's like I've got a really old feel to it, yeah.
It's beautiful. I've picked my room. Where we're podcasting now will be the podcasting room because it's soundproof. So
definitely.
It sounds really great.
Every time, yeah.
You heard it here, folks. Oral agreement. We're going to do it. So yeah, but Self-Made Hero, I know there's a lot of new listeners. For those, you've been on several times, but for those that are new, what is Self-Made Hero? What do you do?
Okay, so Self-Made Hero started about 5 years ago in the UK, and we publish graphic novels. Mm-hmm. And we have expanded so much that we're doing about 20 a year now. And there's three of us. There's Doug Wallace, who's our mm-hmm. marketing director. There's Lizzie Kay, who's editorial and production. And there's me.
Yeah.
And soon to be me,
I'm going to be sort of the podcaster, and then I'll be the face of the company, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Go to all the big premieres, whatever, you know.
And so, yeah, so we've been going for like 5 years, and we just launched in the States this year.
Great. And there's so many, I've talked about so many of the books lately, but we met 2008 at Bristol Expo, and you were fledgling sort of baby coming out of the womb, the company. It was like you had some manga Shakespeare, and that's where I first met Vicelli, Sonia Leong, that whole crew. And we chatted, and then just to watch the growth from then to now, I'm like, oh my God, like in this really quality stuff. I'm not just saying that so they don't kick me out, but it's like you've heard me talk about their books. If you haven't, go back and listen. There's this fantastic work coming out of here. So I've been here, and it's great, and this swanky. I want to live here so bad. This is awesome.
You can come at any time.
Excellent. Again, you heard it, folks. Yep. Agreement. That's binding in New York, I think. Sure, why not? So I've been after Kapow. We'll get into our big Kapow Con. Well, I was there. I've been here for 2 weeks. I was in Bristol. You heard that episode. Lots of great interviews there. I got a really good amount of interviews for Kapow. We're going to put them all here. Well, almost all of them here. Because next episode, 405, I'll release probably Friday or something, will be just a Self-Made Hero episode because I got so many creators from your booth to chat with. So these are just going to be all the other ones. You know, just people like, I don't know, Mark Miller, Jonathan Ross, John McCrae, Gary Erskine, people like that, you know.
You're such a name drop.
You know, that's what I do. Get the hat out, start catching them. Here they come. I spent our last couple of days in London. Thank you so much to David Monteith and Siobhan Monteith for letting me stay with them. That's been so, so nice. Dave, of course, of Geek Syndicate fame, and just an all-around good buddy. If we lived in the same city, there would be trouble. Boy, way too much alike. And I had a lovely time yesterday, even though had a friend had to cancel for work at the last minute to show me around London. But a listener of mine, also a follower of mine on Twitter, Joanna, I'd never met her for a few years now, was like, oh, I might be at Kapow or I might be around London. We'll have to say hi. And so we met up, and she was so cute. She was nervous. She was like, well, you don't have to meet up. It's fine. Like, she thought she was bothering me.
Aww.
I'm like, no, it's fine. So we met up, went to Nando's, went to Gotch Comics, you know,
fantastic.
Her and her friend Amy. And they, you know, we kind of hung out there for a couple hours. It was really nice and sweet. Whatever, I have fans. It's cool. But no, it was really, really nice. And they actually are working on something that I may help them out with. So it was kind of cool. And I rediscovered Crowbar. If you're ever in London, Crowbar, Willett Street or somewhere like that. Old rock metal bar, infused bourbons, and I might be bringing some back with me. Don't tell customs.
And it sounds so great that bar because it's got the
really
2008
awesome. Yeah,
wallpaper.
They got a Captain America shield. They got milk and cheese figurines up there. It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really awesome. So I would definitely check it out. It's always gonna be my stomping ground when I go. We're gonna get into our recaps in a minute, but we do have so many interviews, and we'll go into that. Like I said, I mentioned a few names there. Let's just do a really quickie here. I got him at the end. He's an old friend of mine, John McCrae. People know him for everything. Mm-hmm. You know, he's done Hitman, especially with Garth Ennis. He's done Batman. He's done all stuff for Marvel. He's done, so much work he has, and we have lots of old great stories. If you want to dig up an old story, listen to the Bristol, I think it might have been 08 or 10 interview we did, and we talk about some some things that we did in San Diego were really fun and crazy, but he's such a great guy. And his son, Kirby, was there with him the whole time. So as we're talking, and he's literally packing up the show, so it was like about a 2-minute interview, Kirby's there, what's this? What are we talking about? So he started chatting with us too. So here's John McCrae and his son Kirby.
Records. So we're packing up Kapalcon right now. I'm at John McCrae's table with John McCrae. Hey, bud.
Hey, how's it going, Jimmy? Hey,
real quick, I know you're packing up. We got to go, but you're working on what? What's going on?
Mars Attacks at the moment for IDW.
Yeah, excellent.
And I'm doing a new series comic for Dave Lloyd for his online only publishing with Phil Hester. Plus, I'm still doing Warpaint with Phil Hester for Strip Magazine, which is a UK-based thing. That's about it, I think. Yeah. Warpaint. Mars Attacks is keeping me really busy. Oh, and Dicks. New series of Dicks.
Yeah, new series.
Oh, yeah. It comes out next year.
Yeah, the colorized version.
Yeah. Which I'm doing new covers for.
Nice.
And then it seeks straight into the new series, which starts next year.
For
and I've done the first two issues of that already.
That's great.
So well ahead.
I'm Jimmy. How are you?
This is my son, Kirk.
Hi, how you doing? Yeah. You're famous now. You're on the podcast. Yeah, you going to work on some comics?
Yeah.
Excellent.
He's made over, what, about 100 quid today selling his own comics?
Look at that.
Yeah, yeah. He made more money than I did.
So dinner's on you, huh?
Exactly.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Over 100 quid. And he's 9 years old.
Amazing.
That's $150 US.
That's
a ton of money for a 9-year-old.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Online, can we find you, sir?
www.johnmcrae.com.
Excellent.
Easy
sir.
As that.
Always
Jimmy,
good to see you, sir.
Lovely seeing you, too.
Awesome. Kirby's adorable. Apparently, John said Kirby made more money than he does. He did, like doing commissions all week. And I'm like, right, dinner's on, drinks on Kirby. It's great.
Fantastic.
He's great and awesome. So I'm looking forward to some of the stuff he mentioned that is going to be coming out. Really, really great stuff. Next up, we have this another one sort of caught my eye. Electric Man, this film that was shot. Sort of an independent, small-budget film. And I chatted with him one day, and I came back and decided to do an interview because it looks really interesting. It's Dave Barris, who I believe was the director, Emily Lockwood, one of the stars, and Scott McKay was the writer. It sounded really cool.
I haven't seen that. What's it about? It's
They will tell you about it because I suck at descriptions.
Okay.
So, but it's they do describe about it. But it does sound really interesting. And it looks really cool. It's it's like a comedy, it's sort of superhero comedy thing. But they give you all sorts of information. Here it is. Here they are, Dave, Emily, and Scott with Electric Man.
Mark Kapalcon, I'm at the Electric Man booth. And I'm here with?
It's Dave Barris, director.
Oh, sorry.
Dave Barris, director.
Emily Lockwood, I play Victoria in the film.
Scott McKay, writer of the movie.
Now, what is Electric Man?
Electric Man is a movie about a famous comic book, the eponymous Electric Man, which turns up in the shop of Jazz and Wolf. They need money. It may well be the answer to all their problems, but due to all the other people coming to get it, it turns out to cause more problems than it solves. It was initially going to be Superman, but we couldn't afford it. So I had to come up with Electric Man.
Right, excellent. And why Electric Man? Like, how did you come up with like this particular name and powers or whatever like that? So.
Basically, I had 15 minutes before I was supposed to meet him. Mm-hmm. I was already supposed to have done the work. But I started thinking about the 1930s and that time period and what was new then. Mm-hmm. And I thought quantum physics, blah, 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 blah. And the electricity was still quite a new thing. It wasn't like in all the homes in the USA at that point. So I thought 1930s, electricity would be still quite new. Electric Man.
Excellent, excellent. And you're directing this now. How long is the film and how long was the shoot?
It's 100 minutes, a full feature. The shoot was, we're a low-budget movie, so the shoot was 18 days, six-day weeks, 12 to 14-hour days. Lots of setups a day, but we just, everybody was singing from the same page. We all just got on with it and switched around, did as many setups as we could and got through it. And amazingly, at the end of it, it all edited together, and apparently it works as a film. So That's a minor miracle in itself.
And you shot mostly in the UK, but you did have about a day, about a couple hours in my town, New York, right?
Yeah. Edison Bolt, who's one of the guys who's after the comic, is an American comic book collector. Mm. So he's like, right, he's got to live in New York. Mm. So right, our DOP basically put out a message saying, can anybody give us some shots of NY? And a couple of guys got back to him, and he said, okay, off you go and shoot some street scenes. And some guy... We've never met him. We know his name. He's credited in the movie. He's the New York unit. He went out and shot about 7 different just exterior establishing shots of New York, some with the Empire State Building, yellow cabs, all those iconic New York things. Yeah. And we just went, yeah, we like that one. And then for 10 seconds or 5 seconds in the movie, we've got this establishing New York shot.
Nice.
And everything else is filmed in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Okay, great, great. And tell us a little bit about your part in the movie.
I play Victoria. As Scott said, these two guys, Jazz and Wolf, own this comic book. I'm the ex-girlfriend of Wolf. Hard assed, if I can say that. seemingly, it would seem.
You seem very hard assed.
Oh yeah, it's my thing. Yeah.
When we first met, she punched me. It was weird. I don't know why, but she did.
I do it to everyone. Don't take it personally. yeah. So basically, I'm one of the female love interests in the film, or am I?
Oh, well, I'm asking, are you?
Yes.
So did you have these long 12, 14-hour days, or you sort of lounge in your trailer?
Oh, I had 3 trailers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, sort of, you know, one for food,
one for
sleeping, one for just hanging about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was long days, but, you know, they sped by. When you're having as much fun as we did, it was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And I think everyone who was on the shoot, we've all stayed friends, and, you know, that's a big thing. It was just brilliant.
Yeah, you seem to have an interesting outfit in the promo shots here.
Yes. Yeah, that's there, isn't it? Yeah.
You have to look it up, kids. All right.
Yeah.
Not kids. Sorry. Not safe for work. But.
Yeah, not under 16. Yeah. It's not something that my dad would be watching.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. Now, obviously, this is, you know, you're at a Comic Con and you got a lot of like sort of comic prints, things like that. Might there be a comic book version of this sometime in the near future? What do you think?
Well, actually, I'm now working for, I write comics for Glenna, who are a big European publisher. If we are given the time, what I'd really like to do is extend... I've written the origin of Electric Man, and that forms part of the movie, and it's kind of integral to the plot. But I would love to extend it. And I've got all these comic book ideas, and because we started Electric Man cheekily the year before Superman was even published, because, well, we didn't give a monkey's...
Right.
We actually have everything from 1937 to the present day, and we can fill it in as we go. So if we can get Electric Man to take off and people ask us for it, then sure, yeah, I'd be happy to write comics.
Is there any sort of, like, maybe something online even, like maybe a little webcomic you could do, you could throw it on there?
The actual expense in producing a comic, the initial expense, is artwork. Our artwork's done by Graham Manley, who is a super talented artist, but he actually has to be paid for his time.
It's
to do a page takes him 2 or 3 days, you know, full work. So we have to be able to, you know, recompense him for that time. And if we can do so in the future, we would really, really love to. But we'd like it to be the same standard as we have already, which is very high.
Now, directing wise, now if this does, you know, blockbuster, you know, sequels are always a big thing. You know, it's a big issue with the recent Hunger Games director where he just, you know, couldn't sign on for the sequel. If it gets too big, would you ask for more? Would you want to do the sequel?
I'd love to work with everybody on the cast and crew again. I'd love to get us all back together. Scott and I have got loads of ideas for what happens to Jazz and Wolf and Victoria and Lauren McCall, etc. We'd love to get that. Whether it's a film, we don't know. It might turn out to be we might be like MASH. We might be the movie first and then the sitcom.
Nice.
Who knows? But we've certainly got another feature idea, and we've certainly got another 5 or 6 shorter storyline ideas. So I very much hope, fingers crossed, that sometime in the future, Jazz and Wolf will ride again.
Excellent. Now, it premiered last night here. Is it, you're going to set it on a circuit, the film circuit, or where can we people go see it?
At the minute, we had our world premiere in Port Townsend, just north of Seattle, last September. We had our UK premiere at Glasgow Film Festival under Mark Miller's... he basically runs the Kapow strand of the Glasgow Film Festival, so we were on there. And we've done a little tour of Scotland. Basically, September, October, we're going to... unless we can clutch some kind of distribution deal by that time, we're going to do another UK tour, this time taking in England, Wales, Ireland.
Yeah.
And we'll be back in London a couple of times. And then after that, it'll probably be digital download and DVD. So watch out. Join us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll keep you up to date. There will be, hopefully, we can get into the States somehow, but we just need to put some more feelers out about how we do
just,
that.
Just come to New York. I'm there. I know everybody. It's fine.
We'd love to, Jimmy.
What's the website where they can go to?
www.electricmanmovie.com.
Excellent. Thank you all so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Awesome stuff. So I will hopefully get a screener of that and let you guys know how it is and when it's maybe available at some sort of film festival near
Sounds
you.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Okay. One more before we get into the recap here. This one, again, caught my eye because it said Mr. Who. I'm like, is that a Doctor Who spoof? But it's not. Rashid and Tayo. It's a comic they wrote and drew, but it's also very transmedia. So they have there's a CD in it for music, and then there's stuff on the website as well. I think there's some animation maybe. And it looked really, really interesting. And it's about, like, you know, London's own superhero, Mr. Who.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was pretty cool. So let's hear him talk about Mr. Who.
KapowCon 2012, and I'm here with...
Rashid from Mr. Who.
And I'm Tayo from Mr. Who.
That's not Doctor, that's Mr. Who. Now, I know I'm in the UK, but it's Mr. What is Mr. Who?
Okay, well, Mr. Who is the newest, freshest superhero to emerge from London. He's actually called Mr. Who, Karma's Warrior. And his story is that he was the leader of a notorious gang in London. His younger brother was in the same gang, but was killed by a rival. When his brother was killed, Mr. Who decides to turn his life away from criminality, but take out his vengeance on London's underworld. So, you know, we're really influenced by things like The Punisher, Dark Knight, but you know, we're from London, and London's a major city and needs its own superhero, and that's why we've created this guy.
Excellent.
That's it. And you know, there's also a mystical element of karma, which takes place in, you know, the storyline. You find out that a bit more as the story progresses. We literally launch in part two at the Kapow 2012, and yeah, so we're literally just trying to do our best at creating something unique to London.
To UK. And it's multimedia. It's not just a comic book. It's other stuff too. What else? How are you doing this multimedia thing?
It's really important to us, right? Every comic is attached with a CD, and on that CD, with number one, there was the fictional radio station from the Mr. Who world, London Eye Radio. And so you got music from that. You got the DJs talking about this vigilante, this guy on the streets. Just to bring the reader more into the experience. And with number two, I don't want to reveal too much, but Mr. Who has an encounter with the police, and you actually hear the police interview on a CD.
Oh, nice.
So, and as well with that, all the money that we're raising from the comics going towards our animation, because we're developing the pilot TV series, and
which you can actually see on the website. We have like a short form animation for about 4 minutes. Where you see the development of that as well, and trailers also. So
yeah, so we've got big plans for this project.
Excellent. Can we get it over here in the UK? Obviously, can they get it in the States where I'm from? Can we get it online?
You can definitely get it online. Okay. You can download it from iTunes.
Oh great! Oh awesome.
At the moment, and you can also if you contact us via our website, you know, we'll make sure you get a copy.
And what is that website?
It is MrWho.co.uk, and Mr is spelled M-I-S-T-E-R,
all right.
Who, W-H-O, .co.uk, all right?
Awesome, guys. Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Nice one. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Rashid and Tayo. That's great. Okay, now, here comes a big recap you've all been waiting for because you just, you know, want to know what I've been doing the whole time. But KapowCon was held at the Business Design Center in London from on Saturday and Sunday this weekend or last weekend. And this is the one that Mark Miller started last year, I think was the first year.
Yeah, last year was the first year.
Yeah, and Sarah and Lucy Unwin, sisters, run it. And there was a little bit of controversy here and there about, you know, women in comics, this and that, but we won't get into that. I just want to talk about the show and what happened there. I thought it was really well run.
Yeah.
At first I was a little annoyed, I'll be honest, because I kept trying to set up some interviews and like, oh, just catch them at the show. I'm like, what do you mean catch them at the show? Like Mark, and Mark knows who I am, so, but I literally ran into him 10 times at the show, so I did catch them at the show, so they were right. we got there Saturday. What time did you guys get into set up?
Saturday, we were there. No, we were there on Friday.
Ooh.
We set up Friday evening,
right, okay.
And yeah, so we got there quite early on Saturday, about 8:45, and I think doors opened at 9, yeah.
Well, Friday I got back to London because I went to, you guys heard last episode of the Jamie Smart in Crayford, where we recorded in Brighton when we went down to check it out.
Yeah.
And I got back to London to stay with Dave on Friday, and we went out that night because they were doing a signing at Forbidden Planet, Becky Cloonan and the Kill Shakespeare guys, and then it was Scott Snyder and Trevor McCarthy and Jock. So we went there to hang out with those guys because we know a bunch of them. Like, oh, we're all going to the Phoenix afterwards, that bar that's like, I guess it's sort of a comic book bar people hang out at.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. Like, you know, it was this private club, and like, I guess after a certain time you have to know a member. And so everyone was there, and like, you know, Joe Q and TB from Marvel showed up, and then just tons of other creators there, Tony Lee and Paul Cornell and everybody. And like, you saw everyone you knew. So it was really fun. We didn't make it too late, but it was kind of cool. And I met Sophie from Titan, Titan Books. She was really great. We hung out with her and her friend Emma Price. Were really nice. So many great Emmas over here. Oh my God, Emma Price, Emma Haley, Emma Vicelli. It's great. Really cool. So that was really fun. But so Saturday we got a little later start, and I didn't get there till about 11. What time did the show open Saturday?
It opened at 9, but yeah, I noticed a few people getting there a bit late.
Yeah, I heard earlier it was like nobody.
Yeah, a bit hungover when they arrived. I noticed that, yeah.
I wasn't really hungover. I was just... No, also I was at the mercy of, like, the trains and the bus schedule because Dave does live in South
London. Yeah, blame it on the transport. Yeah, blame it on the London transport. Yeah.
That's right. The tube. Yeah. Goodness. No, we got there around 11-ish, I guess. And actually I got there on my own because Dave had to go teach class. And so I just did, like, the quick walkabout to see everyone in the show floor. You can see a picture on comicnewsinsider.com. of the show floor, and it was a cool setup. As you walked in, the main floor was like the mezzanine. There was a ground floor when you walked in that had like a wrestling ring, which you're like, what's going on there? Like, there's a Lucha Britannia wrestlers, and then there was a stage where they could do interviews with mics and speakers so you can hear, which was great. And then the main floor where you guys were, there's the mezzanine, and that's where all the publishers and retailers and everything were lined up, and cartoonists were lined up on tables. I thought it was a pretty good setup, actually.
Yeah, a really good setup. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Lucy and Sarah did a really great job at organizing Kapow. Cool. And when it started last year, I was so excited about it. And I thought it was a really great show. There's a really good buzz about it. And exactly the same this year.
Oh, good, yeah. You know? It really felt vibrant in the room.
Like, it really did,
It was exciting, yeah.
Yeah.
My only thing that I was concerned about was the artist alley, because I walked up there and a lot of my friends were up there. And it was just an odd setup because it's the way the design center is set up. So there was these little, like in America, we call them cul-de-sacs, roads when you drive down a road and it's just a circle to get out. Not really a roundabout, but it's sort of like, you know, the little so it seemed like these little cul-de-sacs of tables. So they weren't all connected. So there were all these separate little pods of creators, like six people. And some were very crowded if you had people like, you know the Becky and Andy
and Gary
and John McRae were at Q's, and there were some that were kind of empty.
Yeah.
But some people did really well. They set up there, and others just didn't. So it was unfortunate. Like, maybe in the future, if they think, let's put one big name per pod. That way it'll attract the other smaller ones, at least, you know.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. So, I mean, I think there was just a little bit of a complaint up there about the lighting for the artists.
That too, yeah. There's a lot of artists up there trying to draw, so... Yeah.
And there's better lighting on the main floor, but apart from that, it was pretty good.
I thought it was a good setup. So, besides that, and like I said, that's just a minor little thing. But, so I did the walkabout and saw where everybody was. I'm like, okay, let me set up for interviews later and I'll talk, and... they had this VIP drinks thing at 1 o'clock. So I met up with Barry Nugent, also of Geek Syndicate fame, a really good friend of mine. Barry and Dave have been doing Geek Syndicate for years, and they now do Geek to Geek. So they stopped doing Geek Syndicate's the website still, but they do Geek to Geek now. So I was like, let's go check out this VIP drinks thing. All right. So we had to walk like a 5-minute walk down to some bar. And I'd set up some interviews, like I said, ahead of time with people. And as we were walking in, who's coming out? Frankie Boyle. Who, for Americans that don't know who that is, he's a Scottish comedian. Very, very, let's just say he's not afraid to use any language. So he, you know, it could be, you know, some people think he's really crude and this and that. I think he's funny, but you know,
he's great. Yeah.
But you know, he does insult everyone in the audience of his shows. But I think it's, you know, and people say, oh, he crosses the line. He's gonna mock the weak and everything. But I've got a couple of DVDs and but he's also started writing a comic for Clint Magazine, Mark Miller's magazine, sort of an anthology magazine. And so I want to talk to him about that, about comics, and then also for State of Magazine, which you guys know, stateofmag.com, I do stuff for now. I was going to do sort of a crossover interview with him about his comedy career, about that, and the comics. So we literally, as I walk in, I see him, he goes, oh, hey, Jimmy, yeah, when do you want to do the interview? I go, whenever you want. He goes, how about now? I'm like, all right. He goes, well, let's not go in there. It's too many people. It's a loud, sweaty nerd. So it's like, so we found some spot to go to lunch. And so Barry was with him. I'm like, Barry, just come along. It's cool. And so the three of us sat at lunch and just, I turned the mic on and just for 45 minutes we just chatted. And it was really fun. Right. We talked about it. He's a proper comics nerd.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Really knows his stuff and he's super funny. Of course, he dropped, you know, F word, C word here and there. So it's like, but he's a funny guy.
Yeah,
and
we had a really good time. You don't edit those out
though,
right?
No. You got to hear it all. You got to hear it all. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so let it out of it. Just start cursing away. It's fine. She's a lady. Oh, no, she doesn't do that.
I don't swear.
She's a proper lady in a Georgian manner. But
little do you know.
Exactly. Heard stories.
Yeah. Well, we won't go to those.
Yeah, I'll be good. Your brothers are here somewhere, so it's like I'll be good. So that was really, really fun. I was like, what a great start to the show. And that one's gonna go up as a separate episode. Maybe next week I might release it as sort of a special CNI State of Magazine crossover episode. Oh, wow. So that was kind of cool, and thank you, Frankie, for buying us lunch. That was really nice. That was really nice of him. Very good for it or whatever. So I walked about some more, and then I did a few little small interviews here and there, and then I ran into Jonathan Ross. Just dropping the names all over.
Oh, yeah.
Is it dropping the name if they're your friends? Is it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess it is. Whatever. Okay. Here's me not caring. So we chatted for a bit, and he goes, oh, I'm not really here today. I'm here unofficially. He goes, I'm doing this thing with the Luchador wrestlers. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, wait and see it. So it was really funny. I put a little bit of the video on the website in my recap if you guys want to go check it out, where the basic idea is that one of the wrestlers, El Bastardo,
yes.
had that like a little baby ukulele and was grabbed the mic and started putting down all the comic nerds and everything. That comics are for stupid people. We hate them and blah, blah. Look, I've got one of these. America's Got Power is one of Jonathan's comics. And rips it up. So I was like, what are you doing? So he jumps in the air and obviously they, you know, plan. No, not planned. It was totally, you know, totally just off the cuff. So he jumps in and they do this whole little match. And Jonathan wins, of course. It's just like, but it was really funny. The crowd really got into it. But he came out, I had to do like CPR on him because he was like, oh my god, okay, that's really tiring. Like, yeah, dude, that's you get down on like the second rope, you know, almost the top rope, and it was pretty funny. He clotheslined the guy, and he smashed a ukulele over his head, and
fantastic. Cool. Yeah, the wrestlers and all of that was just, I mean, it was sort of kind of insane. Surreal.
Yeah.
The whole thing, just having it in that corner, and sometimes, yeah, you just hear these guys getting just, you know, really whacked on that ground, like really loudly, and you think, oh my god, they must have broken their back or something, but no, they're fine.
It was, I mean, I get the wrestling and comic sort of relationship, I guess, but it's like, it was a weird thing. I'm like, all right, I guess it's just some sort of entertainment thing they want to do, so hey, that's cool. Yeah. And it was entertaining, so we sat there and watched even afterwards some of them. So we just went out for drinks afterwards, a whole bunch of us, and dinner with a bunch of friends, so that was cool. So the first day I felt like I just sort of was getting my feel of the place and did a couple interviews here and there.
But hey, the first day was a really long day. I mean, it was like 9 to 7. That was a long day, and I mean, it was still a lot of traffic. Like when I say traffic, I mean people. There's a lot of
bars. Yeah, how did you guys do that first day?
Really well. I mean, I think, you know, that first couple of hours, you know, people were still in bed and people hangover, and then eventually people got there, and yeah, it was really good. I mean, what we found was there were lots of talks and panels going on in sort of side rooms as well, and then when those big sort of talks had finished, suddenly there'd be this surge of people going past the stands, and then people would start.
Yeah, there's three main, there's like an auditorium for the big room. Well, there's two big rooms, the auditorium, then there's the gallery hall.
Yeah.
And I would pop my head into some of those spots just to check out the first 15 minutes of a panel here and there. And but I'm just not really a panel person, you know, and maybe I should go to more, but I figured, well, am I going to wait in line on a panel and get 5 bits out of it, and then, or should I go get some interviews, you know, so it's just, or and run around and chat with people about stuff. So I didn't really do too many. And the longest one I was in was the one on Sunday. But also there was signings going on as well. The panel thing, I thought that was pretty well run too. Like they had queues lined up, and it doesn't seem too crazy. And like the signings were toward the back I believe it was. Yeah, toward the back area, a separate area where people could line up. And, like, it seemed pretty organized with the
Absolutely. Queues. And you know what? I think, you know, I've been to enough shows now over these past few years that to recognize what a really well-organized show is. Mm. And that's not just, you know, making sure all the, you know, the standholders are there and the people.
Right.
It's the panels. It's the subject of the panels. Mm-hmm. It's the talks. It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot to sort of get
it
right.
It really does.
You know?
And like I said, there was a couple of things, you know, that were just like, okay, we know, curious about, like, the independent comics we'll get to tomorrow was a curious panel. But I'll talk about it when we get to tomorrow. But so later on the night we all hung out. It's nice in the Hilton bar and everything, which, by the way, I have a picture to show you from that's who I was talking about, that person that you don't seem to remember that interrupted our conversation.
I don't remember him.
Maybe you had a couple drinks, because that was the one. I saw him the next day. I was like, I gotta take him out.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm a creep.
I did not remember that guy.
Him and I, and I think maybe Jake, were having this, like, just sort of serious discussion. Just like, you know, catch it up, talk about family. And this guy just inserted himself in our conversation. So I assumed you knew him.
Yeah.
And he told
I don't remember that happening.
Well, I just tried to sort of cut him out of it, and then I was just like, so I changed the subject, and then he just goes, it's what people, if you know someone, come in, say hello. I hate people interrupt conversations. I always sort of stand on the side and just go, wait for my end, and go, like, oh, Emma, hey, just want to say hi, Jimmy. Oh, hi, I'm Jimmy, you are, whatever. But he just kind of stood there and would start replying to things. We're like, what are you talking about? Guess she had a couple drinks, folks.
I had like a pint of Guinness, you know.
All right, fine,
that was it. I wasn't the one hallucinating Jimmy.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. I apparently saw things. It's true. I've been known to see things in the past. So.
Yeah.
So that was cool, and we got to come. And then Sunday we got there early. Did it start at 9 as well on Sunday?
No, it was a bit later on Sunday.
Yeah, because we got there at 10.
Actually, it started at 9:30.
Okay, that's what it was.
The first tour was at 9:30, and I think Jonathan Ross is on that first talk on the Sunday.
Yeah, because I was supposed to meet him. No, first tour was 10:30. I was supposed to meet him at 10.
Yeah.
So we got there a little after, and then in the first of many pushbacks with both him and Mark Miller, I kept finding them like, wait, I forgot I had this press or this charity luncheon. I forgot I had this thing. I'm like, that's cool, and it was fine because I was able to run off and get out of the interviews. But I was just like, oh my god, you guys! So I literally got both of them at the end of the day, but it was totally fine. And then I didn't realize around 1 o'clock, like, what time's the show in today? Like 3:30. I'm like, 3:30? What? And that I was like, why wasn't it till 5? That's another thing that bothered me. I was like, it seemed like a really short day that I was like, all my English friends, well, it's because it's tea time.
No, that's right. Yeah, we all have tea in Britain, you know.
At 3:30. We must stop and have tea at 4.
Tea and biscuits and scones,
which
course.
I love. It's so funny. I'll drink tea over here and do all my, like, you know, British food, the pies and everything. But when I get over there, I'll do it for like a week or two. Like, I'll get my British tea and then I'll stop.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Because I really like it.
Yeah.
And I drink it before over coffee any day, but oh well. We'll see. Maybe I'll try and try keep up with it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try and keep up with it. So that's why I did a ton of interviews that day. And I sat at Self-Made Hero several times and chatted with lots of folks, which you'll hear later on this week when the Self-Made Hero panel or show that we do. I just kept running into people. I walked out and I saw Frankie again, Frankie Boyle, and they're like, oh, he's like, oh, hey, Jimmy, how you doing? I'm good. And Jimmy Carr just got in there. And
I'm
a big fan of Jimmy Carr.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd seen his concert 2 years ago when I was here, and I contacted him, but he never got back to me on Twitter, although that's how I got over Frankie. We got back and forth on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's how I first met Jonathan, was through Twitter, so it's great. So I ran up to him and I was like, oh, hey, Jimmy. And he saw that Frankie knew me. So I guess he had that look like, do I know him too? You know? And I was like, well, we met a couple years ago. You don't remember me. It's fine. I go, I do a podcast called Comic Piece Insert. I wanted to see if you had like a couple minutes, maybe 10 minutes afterward, your panel. And he was like, oh no, I'm sorry. The missus is sick. I could get back. And I was like, oh, okay. That's okay. And then he just went into Jimmy Carr joke mode. It was really funny. He's like, I don't mean to be a dick, but, you know, I'm just not interested, so piss off. And it was, like, totally obviously he was kidding, but I was just like, all right.
Trees walked off.
I know, whatever. So I get both insulted by Frankie Boyle and Jimmy Carr, so I feel good.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I did not get him, alas.
Hey, the other celebrity I saw was Nick Frost.
Yes, I ran into him as well.
Yeah, I
caught him right out coming out of this panel. And I was going to try to get him an interview with him, but he was just being rushed off somewhere else. But I caught actually the end of his panel. It was very funny. The last 10 minutes that he talked about. There's this thing that was released online earlier this year or last year where him and Simon Pegg stood in a desert. Did you see it? When they're in those horrible, like, C-3PO and R2-D2, like, cardboard outfits. And they did this whole thing bit, and it was really funny. And he talked about how, like, I fucking hated that. It was so hot. It was just annoying. But, like, apparently people loved it. It went viral. So maybe we'll do it again. Who knows? But it was very funny. Yeah, but he was being rushed off. I went to the panel. I walked in because Emma Vicelli and Kate Brown, who I'd finally met Kate Brown, and we'd been in touch on Twitter and talked about her books. And she
hasn't met her before.
No, I never met her.
She's lovely.
She is the most. I want to put her in my pocket and carry her around. She's so adorable. I love her. No disrespect, Paul, but it's like she's just really, really sweet. We're going back and forth in emails and Twitter when I recommended her books, and she's so nice.
She's incredibly talented.
Such an artist
and a storyteller.
Really. Like, I'm telling you, you'll hear us talk about when we get to her interview later in the week. And I talked about when I read Fish and Chocolate. It really, really touched me, really moved me. It's just such a powerful piece, these three stories. So listen for that in the next show. So I walked in with Emma and Kate and Becky to this independent comics panel. And it seemed... It was just weird because it's a superhero show and they threw this independent comics panel together, which is great. Giving them a bone. Great. So then they... but most of the creators were part of this thing called Bayou Arcana, which was like male writers, female artists, except for Emma, Kate, and Becky. I felt like they were thrown off at the end. Like, let's get some big names on there. You know, people that have published work and get some people in the room. And I could only stay for like 15, 20 minutes. But they were lovely, and no disrespect to the rest of the people on the panel. None at all. Like, Steve Tanner was on there talking about comics, lovely guy. You're going to hear from him later, and some other folks. But I really wanted to hear a panel with the three of them, with Kate, Emma, and Becky, because they're so engaging and smart and lovely and talented. And I was like, oh, they should put together a panel just for them, you know, to talk about. Because they're established in both worlds, where they started indie. They still do indie, but they've also worked for big... They've all worked for the big two, and or at least I'm not sure if Kate has, but I know Emma and Becky have. But they have published work and this and that. So it was a nice juxtaposition, I guess. But it just seemed like an odd thing that they threw together. So maybe next year that's something they could work on.
I think that. I mean, I didn't go to the panel. It just sounded like that. Maybe just a few too many people on.
Yeah, there was a lot.
So it's hard to get your voice heard, right?
And it's so tough when there's so many people on there. You're like, what's going on? I did get my stash there was some of I bought, some publishers gave me stuff, which was great, and the lovely folks at Seth My Hero, of course, gave me a couple books there. The Hellraisers were just started, I can't wait to finish. And then the Case of Charles Dexter Ward, I really want to look forward to getting to. But Twisted Dark, I got the Dick Turpin from Timebound Comics, it's the Zombie Tale, the Mr. Who comics, Afro Ella, you're only gonna hear from a lot of these people, a couple of copies of The Phoenix, which is the kids sort of magazine. Lou Scannon, which I heard was pretty cool, so I picked it up. Accent UK gave me a couple on their new zombies one, because I love zombies, and the Western Noir one. And then Andy Belanger gave me his new one, Black Church, which looks awesome. I can't wait to get to it. So I got a good stash. The thing is, I'd gotten so much at Bristol the week before, so a lot of the people were there already, so I'm like, well, I already got your book, so. So, and also I got to take all this back with me, which Emma saw my bag. I'm like, oh, God, I should have just had it shipped back. The books, I'm like, I probably have to pay extra for that.
I think you may have to pay extra for your luggage this
last
time,
It's like 50 quid, which is $1,000 US. So, but yeah, I thought it was, I ended up doing a whole bunch of interviews. Like I said, that day I did a ton. And there was, a couple little minor things here and there, but I thought overall it was a really well-run show and a good variety of people. It is heavily superhero stuff, which is what that's not what they want to be. They want to be the European San Diego.
I guess Kapow is positioned in that way, but that doesn't mean they don't invite, British indies that aren't just doing superhero stuff like ourselves, and, other people like No Brow. And, and that's really great that we can all sort of sit together in one room and still have, an audience that likes both sort of types.
But from your point of view as a publisher that doesn't do superhero books, and you guys had a great location too. How did you do? Did you guys do all right?
Yeah, we did really well.
Which is great to hear at a superhero themed show.
Yeah, No, absolutely. And I think, you know, perhaps, I don't know what, you know, who walks through that door, but I mean, I would assume that there'll also be people that are just passing the Islington Design Centre, you know, in the street and seeing the big crowds and thinking, oh, that looks interesting, and just going in on a whim, you know, and just, not just people who've heard about it before.
Yeah.
So a good sort of cross-section of audience. You know?
Oh, cool. So you would definitely do it again, in other words?
Capel, yeah, we did it last year, did this year, definitely do it again, awesome. Absolutely.
Yeah, I would love to if the UK can work on the exchange rate.
Oh, yeah.
So it's better for Americans, and the flights are cheaper, and someone just let me stay here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But you know what, I mean, these shows aren't, for us, they aren't just about sort of selling books, you know, they're just also about like meeting everyone and, you know, and seeing new artists. I mean, this time round, I had so many people come up to the stand and give submissions of their work.
Oh, great,
you know?
Yeah.
And guys that I hadn't met before, and so, and girls,
let's
not forget the girls here.
Yeah.
I got
approached of them while sitting at your booth. Somebody tried to hand me a submission, I was like, no. And just for that, no, we will never hire you.
So you know, it's more than just selling books. Mm-hmm. It's about the whole ambiance, and it's about all the people you meet, and that's what makes it, you know.
Awesome, cool. Yeah. All right, so that was our Capel, and it was awesome and lovely. I got lots of pictures on my Flickr. Go to comicnewsinsider.com for the full recap. If you want to read it more and see pictures, etc. But so many more interviews we're going to get to. So we just talked about, you know, this is Mark Miller's show. He put it together. And at the very, literally at the end of the show, I got him for 15 minutes. And Mark, we talked about how we met like years ago.
Yeah.
This crazy night of walking around trying to find a karaoke place with Laura Hudson. I was like, oh, just want to sit and drink. You know, he's done everything. But what I loved about him was he was so enthusiastic. And, you know, people have issues with him about, you know, calling it the only London Comic Con for a while, even though it was MCM and the London one now. And in some of his work and how he promotes, and I'm like, you know what, he loves comics, he loves working in them, and he says some really interesting things. He's working in film now as well, of course, and TV. So let you hear what he has to say. Here he is, Mr. Mark Miller. Like at PalCon 2012, closing it down with the man himself, Mr. Mark Miller. How you doing, sir?
Doing great.
Now, we first met, was it in New York a few years ago, I believe?
Yeah, probably 2005 or something.
We somehow walked all over New York looking for karaoke spots.
That's right.
It's like, oh my God.
It was at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I know, can we just get a drink somewhere?
It's supposed to be the city that never sleeps, but everything seemed to be closed that night.
I just want a drink. I'm going to see him. Capel, that's the second year at Capel,
yes,
correct?
Yeah,
it's my first time over. Great show, really great variety of guests. What made you want to start a convention here in
It was actually myself and my partner, Lucy. We were just talking about it, and we'd been to a lot of big American shows, and we thought, we'd love something like this here. And there's some great shows here, but they are at very specific kind of things, you know, like... you know, there's great ones all over the country, you know. The further north you go, like Scotland and so on, you know, they're a little bit more sporadic. But in London, there's a few great shows that kind of cover a bit of comics, a bit of wrestling, a bit of video games and things like that. But we thought, wouldn't it be great to have something that was really just like a big, big kind of comics and comics-related kind of movie and TV kind of show as well? Something like San Diego, but to try and do it for Europe. So the European San Diego was always our ambition. And we're very lucky that we have a great contacts list, like all my pals from comics and all my pals from movies. And Lucy works in the film industry as well, and she's got the most amazing contact list through the studios and everything. So in the first year, it was insane. We had all the studios down with Thor and Loki, like Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston and everything, and Duncan Jones and these guys. Just all these amazing guys. John Romita came over from the comic side of things. Lanil Yu came in from the Philippines. And we just did an insane first show. It was kind of like, it looked like it had been running for 30 years, this thing. And we thought, let's do it again.
It seems to be working well. It was a really amazing group of guests, and a lot of people seem pretty accessible too, which was really nice.
That's what's quite nice about the size of the venue. I mean, there is a green room, but really the green room is just to prepare to go out and do your talk, you know. It's people to put on makeup or whatever, you know. So Joe Quesada to put on his makeup.
Exactly.
And like, but you know, the rest of the thing is quite intimate. I mean, it holds 11,000 people over the 2 days, which is quite small when you consider San Diego's 160,000 over 4 days maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, what's really nice about that is it means that you all see each other. Like, if I want to see a guest, chances are I'll get his autograph or shake his hand or whatever, you know. It's kind of hard to avoid someone.
Yeah, I ran into you 10 times.
By time five, you were like, oh my God, it's that guy. You know?
I think you're following me, Mark. Come on, really.
But it's true, you know, the convention is amazing for just bumping into everyone. And the we've got like 100 really good guests at the show, and when you think there's only 11,000 people over the whole weekend, the proportion of guests to fans is actually enormously good in the fans' favour, you know. So you're not having to queue for 7 hours to go and see somebody you want to see and everything. It's not really it's just a lovely experience. You maybe wait 45 minutes an hour for something.
Of course, comic wise, you know, you've got a Miller World, we've got a lot of great comics coming out. I love Secret Service, it's so great. Super Crooks is great too. What else do you have coming up from Marvel Originals?
Well, when I left Marvel last year, I was very, very lucky. You know, once it did very well as a comic, and then well as a movie, and then Kick-Ass did great as a comic, great as a movie. And I just thought, I really want to do more of this stuff. So I went full steam ahead into Create Runs, which I'm just loving. You know, I mean, I'm loving every second of it, and I'm very fortunate that every issue seems to be going down really well. You know, we're selling a lot of copies, people like them. So Secret Service and Super Crooks we've got out already. Super Crooks is almost done, actually, you know. The next thing out is Hit Girl. Kick-Ass 2 finished a few weeks ago. Hit Girl starts in a couple of weeks' time. And then that's followed by Nemesis 2 in September and Jupiter's Children in October, where I work with Steve McNiven and Frank Quitely. And I just looked at this year and I thought, my God, you know, I've got Frank Quitely, Romita Jr., Steve McNiven, Lineal Yu, and Dave Gibbons. It's like, I mean, that
not bad.
It's like A-plus list, that is. You know, I mean, I'd say there's more good artists at Millerworld than there is at either of the big two companies, which is insane. You know, I can't believe my luck. And I've actually got three amazing ones lined up for next year too that I'll divulge towards Christmas. Okay. You know? So I mean, again, I just
does
can't believe
it rhyme
my
with
luck.
No. But yeah, you mentioned, of course, you did a lot of great work. I mean, obviously, all over 2000 AD, DC, and Marvel, all your Marvel stuff. And you really helped recreate that Ultimates line.
Yeah. Which was with Brian Hitch, you know, I mean, you can never underestimate Hitch's part of all this. I mean, he's just like a god. You know, when you watch these movies, you can just see his designs and
Ultimates
every fiber.
Ultimates was so cinematic,
movie.
You know.
Oh my god,
and like, and of course that you helped create the new look for Nick Fury, which of course is in all the now Marvel films. Hope you get a kickback from that.
Sadly, no, you know. But you know, it's funny, people say, I mean, obviously the Ultimates influenced a lot of the movies and things like that, but like, you know, it's all good, you know. I mean, the way I look at it is, I mean, it was the most amazing launch pad for us to go on and do things like America's Got Powers and Kick-Ass and all the things we're lucky to do, and we had a great time doing it. We got paid to do it at the time. I mean, Eric Larson quite brilliantly said people shouldn't be annoyed whenever they use your comic stuff as the basis for a movie, because a painter and decorator comes in and paints a house and puts in a new staircase or whatever, but they don't own the house at the end of it, and that's a good way of looking at it. You know? If you do work for hire, you've got to accept, you know, they made cartoons of the Ultimates a few years back, and now they'll do movie stuff with the Ultimates, which is fine. It's, okay. It's flattering, you know, it's a compliment. The way I look at it is, you know, I'm off doing my Millerworld things now, and it was an amazing, exciting period in my career to do that.
And you've got a lot of these, obviously, going to film. Obviously, Wanted, is going through, is Wanted 2 is being shot, shooting soon, or is already shooting?
Towards the end of the year, Wanted 2.
Kick-Ass 2, I assume, is going to be...
Kick-Ass 2 shoots in 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I actually saw the set starting to get built. I was out at the stages the other day, you know, and that's very exciting. So we had, at the convention, with the director, Jeff Wardlow, here talking to everyone, and it's funny, because following Matthew Vaughn's quite a big thing. Matthew Vaughn's been the kind of George Lucas in this, you know, bringing in Irving Kershner, you know, and Matthew has brought in Jeff with his seal of approval, you know. So it's just, you know, he really got everyone quite buzzed up, because people are like, where's Matthew? But then Jeff spoke for 45 minutes yesterday, and everybody was like, all right, we get now. We get now why we've got this guy. He's good.
Yeah, getting great. I mean, you get people like Jane Goldman to do scripts. Amazing, you know?
Oh,
like,
Matthew knows exactly what he's doing, yeah.
Yeah. Now, is that the goal for a lot of Millerworld stuff, to turn it into film?
Or? Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's quite interesting, because it's very distinct. I don't see comics as a stepping stone to movies, but I see movies as an amazing advert for my comics, you know? So, I mean, I'm offered movie stuff all the time. I mean, ever since Wanted made $340 million, I've been offered loads of screenplays. But I'm not a screenwriter. I have no interest in it at all, genuinely.
Oh,
not.
Okay.
You know? I really like writing comics, and I keep doing comics. You know, I literally turn everything down. I've turned down everything that I've been offered.
Because
but I really enjoy just doing comics, you know. And I've co-written the screenplay for Super Crooks with Nacho Vigalondo, the director, and I'm co-writing Nemesis with Joe Carnahan, but like in October. But you know, really screenwriting isn't where I see my future or anything. I really see my future sitting at my computer writing comics, the way I have done for the last 20 years.
It's a different process from a script for a comic than a script for a movie.
Oh, totally. Yeah. But it's like, that's my world, you know. Like, I see the movies, like I say, as an ad. I see it as also a brilliant experience, but it's an ad for your comic. And if somebody offered me a $100 million ad for my comic, I'm going to take it. You know? And it's a nice payday and everything as well, which is great because, you know, if you don't get paid that money, Marvel and DC get paid that money, right, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, the guys who came before us would kill for the opportunities we have now. Imagine Kirby or Siegel and Schuster and all these guys got to hang up their copyrights when they made it into movies. We're doing this job at the best time in the world.
That's great. Now, speaking of, it feels like you're going to get into some directing yourself, which you already have you?
I started about a year and a bit ago or something and then stopped a weekend, you know, because it was funny, we actually shot 7 minutes of a movie, seven days worth of Miracle Park. And we blew about maybe 70 grand or something in that time. But then somebody pointed out to me, they said, do you know a movie almost exactly like this is getting made right now? And I was like, what? And see if you know the movie. It's like, and they'd started before us. I mean, by no means did they rip us off. It's just a horrible coincidence. But the first I heard about this was awful. It was, they said, it's a found footage superhero movie about a bunch of teenagers who get superpowers. One of them goes evil and the others have to stop them. And it's Chronicle, you know, it's exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly the plot of my film. And I was like, oh, the only difference was mine was set in Scotland, which makes it less marketable. So all I would have is a cheaper foreign version of Chronicle, you know? So I ended up just pulling the plug on it. But the money that we had, when we raised quite a bit of money for it, we're just moving into another production just now anyway, you know. So we're going to be doing the American Jesus movie.
That's great. That was such a fantastic story. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Well, I've got book 2 of that coming out at Christmas.
Oh, great.
And then book 3 next summer, you know. So, like, man or Catholic is satisfied, I'm going to get my Jesus story out there, you know.
Well, besides, obviously, comic writing, screenplays, and this, but you also started a magazine.
Yes, yeah.
Called Clint.
Yeah.
And what was the purpose of Clint?
The idea was, you know, I like magazines. I like comic magazines. Like, I don't know, I'm not quite sure how it works in the States, but in the UK we used to read a lot of our comics on the newsstands, you know, repackaged. The American comics repackaged as magazine format. And there was things like Rampaging Hulk around about 1980 and so on, like the Hulk magazines and things. And I just love that format. The size of it is actually a cool size to read comics at, blown up. And I also like the idea of doing a cheaper package. Like, comics are quite expensive, you know. I mean, they're $3.99 an issue. I try and keep mine at $2.99, but I like the idea of doing something. You get 4 comics essentially for £5, £4.99. You can get 4 American comics all in one magazine. So they are reprints mainly, you know, they're reprints of stuff from you know, the Miller World books in the States and Image books and Icon books and so on. But, like, I also like the idea of trying to find some new talent too. So it's quite hard, it's expensive, you know, and it's hard to find time to read through a lot of scripts and so on. But, like, we've managed to find a couple of really good guys. And, you know, I mean, I'm 42 and I'm one of the youngest guys working in the British comics scene, which is ridiculous, you know. So I love the idea of guys in their 20s and things coming through now. And we've found this great guy, Monty Needle, who's done a comic strip called Death Sentence. It's appearing in Clint just now, and I absolutely love it. It's just appeared this month, and the new issue that's just out this week, and I think people are going to go crazy for it. And if I can find one good guy and help him get a start, then I'm happy.
Well, then you have people like Jimmy Carr and Frankie Boyle doing
comics
as well. And I actually had lunch yesterday with Frankie, and we did a whole
lunch.
And he's a proper comics nerd.
Oh my God, Frankie really knows his stuff. Yeah. And you know, really, Clint Magazine is basically all my pals, really, you know, that I've said, like, do you want to write a comic strip for it? Do you want to be interviewed for it and things? And, you know, I mean, they've been lovely. They've done us the most amazing favours. But basically anything I'm into, I fell Clint Magazine with. I love Jimmy Carr. He's my favourite comedian. So Jimmy was the first interview, I think, in the first issue and so on, you know. So I like the idea of, I mean, it sounds so selfish, but just filling a magazine with stuff I like, you know, and then I get to read it later, you know.
Well, you mentioned, you know, you did this great thing for DC, Red Sun, which is just an amazing tale about Superman, like, you know, growing up in the Cold War in Russia. You've mentioned in the past about how you would love to redo Superman.
Yeah.
Somehow. How would you approach that?
The moment has passed, though. It can't be done now because, you know, the New 52 did a sort of Superman, Batman, Justice League reboot, and to have another one now, you know, I'd have to be 60 before they do it again, you know, and I'm going to be rubbish by then, you know. So, they could reboot it again next year.
But yeah, let's see. What do we have next for you coming up? You're traveling all over the world, all these.
Well, I'm doing a signing this week right after Kapow. I'm going to Manila. and I'm going to do a signing in the Philippines with Lanil Yu. And that was quite a funny thing. What I did was I put a thing up on Twitter and said, whatever comic store orders the most copies of my new book, I will go and do a signing, and I'll pay my own airfare and I'll pay my hotel and I'll do a signing in your store. And I thought it was going to be London or LA or New York, and it turned out to be the Philippines. It was the last thing I expected. So I'm literally going to fly out, sign, and come back. You know, I'll do a day out there. Oh, and like, but I can't wait. I mean, I've got friends out there, like Lineal Yu lives there, and it'll be great to see he and his wife, Anna, you know.
Yeah.
So,
I've never been, actually. My dad's from the Philippines. I've never been.
Is Aquino a Filipino name?
Now, I'm a huge zombie fan now, and you sort of helped kick that whole little Marvel zombie craze off with
Fantastic Four, and then they spun it off into that Marvel Zombies comic, and then they did five other spin-offs to that. They actually promised me at the time, I'll give you some money for this, and I never got a penny.
Guys. But I'd love to, any zombie stuff in the normal world, maybe?
I feel zombies is kind of... it's not played out yet, because I still love Walking Dead, but I feel any new zombie project is ill-advised, probably, now. You know,
besides the American Jesus coming out, any other sort of just non-superhero stuff you might create?
Well, Secret Service, Matthew and I are developing a film at the same time. Matthew's probably going to do the second X-Men movie first, I'd imagine, because Jennifer Lawrence, I think, has quite a tight schedule, so we'll shoot that at the start of the year. But hopefully, right after that, we'll get into the Secret Service movie. Matthew and I co-wrote the comics. So.
That opening of Secret Service.
Oh, it's hilarious. Are you going
to be able to get him to do it, you think?
Oh, Mark Hamill's already agreed. Yeah. I mean, it was the weirdest phone call of my life, because Mark Hamill's like one of my all-time heroes, you know? And like,
I met him at Comic-Con this year, interviewing. He's great.
Oh, what a lovely man. And I met, it's the only time in my life, twice in my life, I've been nervous making a phone call. The first one was Stan Lee when I was interviewing, and it was kind of like phoning Galactus.
Yeah.
It's like, how can Stan even exist? Like, how can I possibly phone him, you know? And it was the same with Mark Hamill. It's like, to actually be giving, you know, like 12 digits or whatever and phone Mark Hamill just seemed crazy. And but he was the sweetest guy, and I said, is it okay, can you appear in the new book? And he was like, absolutely. I said, you do die at the end of the scene. But he was actually really nice about it, and of course he would be in the movie as well. Vaughn is the biggest Star Wars fan in the world. Vaughn actually went onto the Empire Strikes Back set when he was 8 years old, and he actually got to run around on the Dagobah place where, like, you know, where Luke was training, and he didn't get to meet anyone or anything, but he got to actually hang out on that set when he was 8, you know. So his Star Wars nerddom is as big as us.
Now, you're very active online. People can find you on Twitter.
Twitter. Facebook, Twitter, Miller World. I'm doing anything except working.
is it just Mark Miller? It's Mark Miller on Twitter.
Mr. Mark Miller on Twitter.
And then Miller World.
By the way, that isn't me being pretentious. It's just there was already like 10 Mark Millers.
And it's Miller World.
Miller World. That was my email address. MillerWorld.tv.
That's great. Well, Mark, such a pleasure. It's great to see you again. And
you
too. Appreciate it. Thanks so
much.
Jimmy.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Mark, Lucy, Sarah. So great. Really, really good time. And I do want to cover next year, so maybe, Mark, if you just want to fly me out, that'd be awesome. And be the official podcaster of...
Yeah.
I bet I got probably the most interviews out of any podcaster there, so you should.
Absolutely, yeah.
But also, right before him, again at the end of the show, he's so great. Jonathan was doing a signing, and he went almost an hour over at his signing just because the queue kept getting bigger and bigger. And literally, as I'm trying to interview him, people are like, give me 10 minutes so I can talk to Jimmy. I'm going to talk to him all week and try to talk to him. So he was great. We just talked about like some of the comic work he's working on, America's Got Powers. Golden Age has been pushed back a little. And some other stuff coming up. And I found this out afterwards in one of the panels, so I couldn't bust his chops about it. Apparently, he's going to start a comics podcast.
Oh, yeah?
I'm like, what? I believe you've been on my show enough, so I've inspired you. Well, he was on Geek Syndicate a few times. He's been on my show several times. I'm going to have to give him a call and have a little talk with him about that. So
send the boys
we'll
in.
Yeah, exactly. Crack some skulls on that one. But I should think it would be interesting because, he loves comics so much. Like, when people remember, I went to his house 2 years ago, and he has this huge room full of, like, original comic art, Ditko stuff, and Kirby, and all these other great things, and so many toys, and it's ridiculous. And he was like a little kid going, Jimmy, look at this one. Look at, I have the original X-Men. I have the original Thor. And it's like, it wasn't this bragging thing. It was just like, he was so excited to show people.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. But here he is. Here's Wasi.
I'm here with Mr. Popularity, Jonathan Ross. Hello, sir.
Hello, Jimmy. How's it going?
Very good. Gosh, you've been lying for hours. Amazing signing. That was awesome. Now, here at KapowCon, today officially you did some signings, So, but yesterday you're unofficially, but you did a little wrestling.
Yes, I kicked the ass, if we can say that, of El Stupido, yes, the luchadore, who was bad-mouthing not just me and my canon of work, but also the comic community in general. So I had to put him in his place.
Yeah, he ripped up a America's Cup Bowers.
I know, but that was silly of him because he could have sold that. They've sold out upstairs, and that was the first printing. That was like $20 he ripped
exactly
on there.
Well, speaking of America's Got Powers, we reviewed that, or absolutely loved it.
Oh,
it's
thank
great.
You.
And obviously, it's got, you know, Britain's Got Talent and America's Got things like that. What made you want to do something like that, sort of the reality-based thing?
Just, well, I like the idea. It just seemed like a cool concept, really, initially, and it is one. I didn't realize anyone had done something similar, and I found out afterwards a couple of guys had. But we, I like the idea of it, and then we sat down, and I thought, okay, this is a really neat way of telling a story and getting us involved. I mean, I like, you know, when I think back at the Silver Age of comics and the early Marvel books that I grew up with, they were always about kids. They were always about teens. Even like the FF, you thought them as they were like a young family of people, you know. And so I like the idea of it being about that sort of age group, and this was a natural fit for that. And then I thought, because you are combining the age group you want to work with the that kind of storyline, you can make it about the way they're eaten up by the entertainment industry, the way they're used and that kind of thing, and the way we exploit people. So it seemed to come together nicely.
Have you shown it to Mr. Cal yet?
No, but I think he knows we're doing it, but I haven't shown him a copy yet. He can buy a copy. He can afford it.
Exactly. Well, obviously, that's a mini-series, right? You can do 4 issues of that?
Six issues.
Okay. And Golden Age is coming out soon, yes?
Well, not soon, okay. I don't think. I mean, it was meant to be soon. Okay. Tommy has the first 3 scripts finished, and I have the next 4 laid out. But I stopped working for now because there's no real rush, because he finished book 1, but then he got an offer for a job that he really wanted to do, working for Microsoft doing something. So
okay,
he put Golden Age on the back burner for now. I think he's back doing a few pages now, and hopefully he'll be back fully on it after the summer.
But remind people what Golden Age is, a quick pitch.
It's kind of like, imagine the Avengers in a retirement home. That's it, really. Okay. It's like my version of Captain America is called Mr. USA, and he's finally being told, despite his longevity and his great kind of anti-aging powers, it's time for him to call it a day. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of I was thinking about the flip side to what Marvel have done with Captain America. They've made it that Captain America is a kind of noble figure from the past who has old style values. And I was thinking, well, what if he was a guy from the past who had values that don't really tally with the modern world? You know, so he's not a racist as such, he's not a homophobe, but he's a little uncomfortable with homosexuals.
Sure,
you know,
right,
because in the 40s that wasn't out there. You know, it wasn't something he ever had to deal with. So I thought it'd be kind of interesting. He's not Archie Bunker exactly, but he's a slightly more kind of less modern version of a 1940s man than the current Cap is. And there's a kind of reason why they try and come out of retirement, but then there's another reason why they should stay in retirement, and there's also Nazis and flying saucers involved. So I think there's a bit of something for everyone.
Well, Turf, of course, is collected now, and that was your first foray into comic book world. Fantastic. Might we see a sequel to that?
Maybe, I don't know, probably not, to be honest with you. I mean, I like the idea, and I had a really good story for the sequel, but, you know, it's exciting doing new things.
Yeah, sure.
You know, going forward and doing new things. But and also, you know, it's not so much for me. The artists, when they're doing a book, that's a year or a year and a half.
Yeah.
So they've got to really want to get into something to go and spend another year and a half of their life doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can write a book, you know, in 3-4 months. And also, you can do other stuff while you're writing the book, if need be. But as an artist, you can't really. So it's more the art side of it than anything else.
Any possible adaptations of them, be it animated or live action, of any of your books?
I think Tommy's talking to some people about possibly doing an animated Turf.
Oh, yeah.
He's talking to some guys who are working with something else, and we're talking to a studio currently about America's Got Powers.
Oh, that is absolutely... I could see, when I read the first issue, I was like, oh, my God, these fight scenes are amazing.
But, well, you know, the way Brian draws it, you feels like you're watching a movie already. So, but who knows? You know, I know so many people who sell the option stuff and it never gets made. Who knows? That's not why we do it. I'm doing it because I love comics, you know.
Now, I'm not sure if you can talk about some things you said you were working on yesterday, you showed me, but
what was
any
that?
Sort of like video game type things you have? Or?
Yeah, but you know what, I can't go into those yet, because they're not ready. Right. When they're ready, I'll let you know.
Okay, all right. Yeah, it's a big thing. You guys will hear about it soon enough.
Yeah,
is there anything else you got down the line you want to?
Not particularly. I mean, you know, I might be doing something with, I was out for dinner last night, and there's a book I wrote a while ago, which I might now do with Ian Churchill.
Oh, okay.
There was another book I was writing that he was keen on, and I was going to work on this summer, but then because I thought I was doing Golden Age, I thought, okay, I need to make sure I've got time to do Golden Age and America's Got Powers. And unfortunately, because Golden Age on the book, but I could have done it.
Right.
So he then signed the contract with DC. I'm not quite sure when he'll be free from that, but when he is, we're going to hopefully do probably this kind of very gruesome horror story that I wrote. But it's a horror story with a superhero angle, but it's not really a superhero. It's a fake superhero thing. It's quite a cool idea, I think.
Excellent. Any of the big two, have they approached you by working on their properties?
No.
What?
No, not
we're
at
here.
All.
Let's talk
no,
to Joe Q. The interview's here. Come on.
Well, Joe Q, I know, and I went back to his house for dinner once, and he's very nice, but I think I think he sees me more just as a friend than a co-worker.
Would you like to?
Yeah, I love Marvel. I love DC, you know, and I love
I love all their main characters, you know, and there's some of the minor characters. I mean, I had two Marvel ideas. I really liked. I had a S.H.I.E.L.D. idea, though. Well, it's a Nick Fury idea, but it's a weird one. And I had a great idea for the last book of it. Would you have done it? I don't think anyone's ever done it before.
All right, well, but maybe we'll see in the future.
Yeah, who knows? If not, I'll do a thinly disguised version. It'll be exactly. Called Dick Shuey or something like that.
Exactly.
Agent of Build.
Exactly. When are we going to see you back in the States?
I'll be over at San Diego for the Comic-Con, so I'll see you there.
All right, we'll have drinks there. Thank you, sir.
Cheers, Jimmy. Good to see you. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, sir. It was great hanging out with you. Thanks for hanging, the drinks, etc. I didn't appreciate the reach around, but whatever. That's cool. I feel we're close enough where I can let it slide, so it's good. Another one I got actually during drinks at the Hilton after Sunday. We ran off to be a little quiet. We talked at Bristol, but we hadn't had a chance to record anything. I've known him for years also, Gary Erskine. He's working on this new comic about roller girls, and it just looks so... I'm a huge roller derby fan. I love it. And there were some of the London roller derby girls were there this weekend as well. And he's really excited about it. Of course, he's worked on everything. You'll hear about him talk about a few things, but he's mostly chatting about the roller girls comic. So here he is, Mr. Gary Erskine.
Post-Kapow Comic-Con, sitting here having a drink, Mr. Gary Erskine. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Jimmy.
Always great to see you.
Thank you.
You're quite busy at Bristol, so we're busy at Kapow as well. But tell people why, because there's a great roller derby comic coming out, and you've been working on that a lot lately. So.
Well, I think after about 20 years in the industry, I just felt that it would be nice to do something myself, completely creator-owned, and I'm working with my wife, Vari Stewart, and we've always been roller derby fans, and there's a little bit of rollerball in there as well.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the original concept was to do an all-female rollerball, but that comes with like concept design, and then you've got a very small genre audience. And we thought, well, derby itself is exciting. Why not just do a kind of soap opera-based character piece with... You know, centered around the roller derby community, and just dealing with real life drama on and off the track, and we're having a ball.
That's excellent. Now, did you have you gone to a lot of matches? Have you talked to a lot of derby girls?
Oh yeah, we have been fans for a long time anyway. There's a really strong Glasgow scene that's been going for about 5 years. I think it's about 7+ in London, and. Anecdotally, it's the fastest growing grassroots sport in the world, and there are more teams cropping up, you know.
Every
month, you know yourself.
Oh, God,
And funnily enough, when we were soft releasing a lot of the imagery to friends and for me to some of my colleagues, the amount of people who have a sister, a girlfriend, a niece, or a friend on the team, it's bubbling under, and. Quite exciting, but we go to a lot of matches at home in Glasgow, and we travel, and the response from the community has been incredibly positive. Very supportive too, both with technical details and some deliciously wicked anecdotes as well, which I won't tell you about.
What I've always liked, I love about derby is that they all have like superhero names. They're superheroes. It's like it's so great in costumes and you know.
Well, I every so often I keep tweeting that it is the new superheroes.
Yeah.
You've got your Amazonian goddesses and your alien heroines in print, but these are like real people. They have alternate identities. The way they dress and carry themselves, they are superhuman. And on the track, as you've seen yourself, they're phenomenal to watch. And these sort of heightened personas that they carry, they are the new superheroes. And there's a little bit of Tank Girl in there as well.
Yeah.
I've already... pestered Rufus for a few sketches, and he's up for it because he hangs around the London scene, so he knows like the Rocking Rollers and the London Roller Girls.
Oh, that's great.
And it's a great scene, and as far as our country's concerned in the UK, once we get like terrestrial television, Channel 4, Channel 5, that'll explode for us. But I think in America, it's really much more out there. And
yeah, definitely. Like the New York team, you know, they showed on the local, like a local cable channel. So it's not like, you know, on one of the main stations. But still, it's nice that we can see it.
It's getting there.
So, yeah, it's getting there. But and I remember years ago, I think I talked to you about this. Bravo did a reality show called Roller Girls, which
yes,
I loved. It was about the Texas Roller Derby team, and it was amazing. So definitely trying to find that. It's great. You know, there's been a couple of movies here and there, you know, the okay, Whip It and things like that, you know. But
I think Whip It took a certain direction that sort of, you know, the loner going to a new town and trying to fit in and feeling slightly outcast and then finding a community that they can blend into. For me, still a little bit of Rollerball, no motorcycles. But I reckon that with, I believe it's three documentaries coming out this year, there's one with Juliet Lewis that's narrating, and there's an Australian one. The names have escaped me for the moment. But depending on the response to those, I think it's going to be critical mass by the end of the year. They had the World Cup just in Canada in, I think it was December. That was Blood and Thunder magazine were carrying that. By the time we hit the end of this year, I reckon it will be, it will just have crossed that divide into the main public conscience, and I think that's when it will really explode.
When do you think your Derby comic's going to come out?
Well, there's the rub. As you probably know, it's very difficult to produce a comic. We're dealing with at least 15 principal characters on at least one team, their extended relationships and family, and we're not going to rush something out that's exploitative or just to tap into what we feel is like popular at that particular moment. We're hoping within the next 2 or 3 months, and it's going to be a kind of online release for free, just to test the market, just like episodically, and then we'll offer both digitally and in print, kind of a hard copy of the book. But we've got some storytelling tricks, which will mean that the reading experience online for free is different to the one. There'll be more in the printed edition or the PDF when they receive it. So there'll be a. I think you have to offer people a taster of what you've got to offer. That try before you buy, or $1 samplers, I think, are quite common in a lot of companies right now. And since it's only myself and my wife that are dealing with this, we've got plenty of opportunities and choices and avenues to explore. And everyone's welcome. And we'll hopefully capture a really appreciative audience in some way.
Can they see any of the prints online right now? Can you go?
Yes, we have. If people go to rollergirls.com, and that's GRRRLS, after the Riot Girls, I couldn't believe my luck when no one had bought that domain name. It's like best $75 I've ever spent. But if they go to that, that will be our hub. But most of the stuff that is available to see right now is on Facebook. It's I think it's the most accessible and interactive source for us for people to like get in touch with us and see what we're doing and comment. But we're also on Tumblr, Blogger, and Twitter, as I think most of your fans will follow that anyway. But yeah, it's looking very promising. And let's see, we've already had the Rocking Rollers.
They're great. I talked to a couple of them.
Again, we've actually been given some stories by them that might feature in later episodes.
That's great.
And the other thing we're doing is, again, because of the roller derby community being so passionate and enthusiastic about their sport, is when we realised that we couldn't come up with the names of each team and then the subsequent teams they play against and when they go on tour, we came up with the idea of actually having them play against real teams.
So
teams from Leeds, London, Glasgow and Edinburgh, and some of the teams we met when we've been on tour in Europe, we're going to approach them and offer them the chance to play against our fictional teams and even appear in after-party scenes. Not in a bad light or anything.
Oh, that's great. You get me in the comic. That's awesome.
It personalises each edition. Yeah. So rather than an issue 5 or 6, it's like, that's the London Rocking Rollers issue, that's the Lille Switchblade Roller Girls issue, or that's the Glasgow issue.
Yeah.
We have to play Glasgow first.
Right, of course.
The only problem, who wins?
That could be tough.
It's going to be the toss of a coin, and then the team has to go with that. But our team has to win at least a couple of bets.
You gotta win a couple of bets, I'm sure. Now, of course, you've had a long career, worked with several different companies. For those that might not know, they're just hearing about the role. What else have you worked on in the past that they would know?
I've been 20 odd years, so
I know.
2000 AD, I think your American readers, listeners will be familiar with that. I think it's actually coming over with IDW, is that right?
IDW's got to deal with them as well,
I've worked with IDW, Dark Horse, Marvel, DC Comics. I was quite recently on The Unwritten with Mike Carey for Vertigo just a couple of months ago. I did a Judge Dredd magazine two-parter, I think that was in March. But I've worked with Warren Ellis, Grant Morrison on The Filth with Chris West. I worked with Mark Miller on his last issue of The Authority. Garth Ennis and various other people. I've been incredibly fortunate to work with some great writers and great projects. Paul Jenkins on Captain America as well. That was, I think, 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I've just flirted, like a lot of freelancers in the industry, just from one job to the next. Sometimes I wish I'd been on one book and been different. Like Tony Harrison's Starman.
Sure, oh, I did, great run.
I did 2 issues. I'm still getting royalties 15 years later. He must be minted. But it never really associated with one book, but nice to have had that range and diversity. Yeah. And as an artist, it's nice to challenge with different companies and different properties.
I bet that's great. So where can we find you online, your work and everything?
I think again, Facebook's probably the most accessible. I don't update my actual main website as clearly, and a lot of time and effort's now put into Roller Girls.
Sure.
But if people search for me, I have a blog. Just typing in my name, Gary Erskine, I'm sure they'll find it. And
E-R-S-K-I-N-E.
Yes, so it's a silent E.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Gary, always great to see you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Awesome. He was so funny because I think he's Scottish. You know, Mark's Scottish. Frankie's Scottish. And his wife made a joke about, you should release one called the Tartan Special, which apparently I didn't realize later. She's like, that's some sort of drink or something like that.
Right.
I'm like, I should have put it on together. welcome to Comic News. Sorry, I had to do it. News Inside the Freedom. He's going to kill me now. Sorry, Gary. Frankie, Mark, sorry.
That's Mel Gibson.
Yeah, I know.
Come on,
exactly. But it was great. I look forward to that when it comes out, so... a few more interviews here we're going to run through here. Another comic that caught my eye was Afro Ella. And you'll hear them describe it. Gemma Badia, Lee Fenton Wilkinson, the writer and the artist. It's about sort of a cross between, I guess, Barbarella and the blaxploitation films.
Cool.
Things like
Sounds
that.
Really
so it looked
good.
Really cool
and
really fun. So here they are talking about Gemma and Lee.
Kapowcon, I'm at the Afro Ella booth. And I'm here with...
Gemma, I'm the writer of Afro Ella.
Lee Fenton Wilkinson, I do the artwork.
What is Afro Ella?
Afro Ella is our first comic. It's a blaxploitation take on sort of Barbarella and other space opera comics and films. It's Afro Ella is an elite Lunasona Liberty agent, and she goes around the galaxy sort of fighting monsters, righting wrongs, being awesome.
Not much add to that. I think she's pretty much covered it.
Well, when Gemma came up with this idea, how did you help come up with the concept, or was this all your concept to draw? Or?
There was quite a lot of back and forth with it. It was kind of like quite organic the way we did it. We had some loose sketches. Gem came up with a name, just passed it back between us. And I mean, Gemma's a costume designer as well, which helped greatly.
Basically, what happens with Lee and I is we get together and then we sort of egg each other on enough for us to sort of take a small idea and it becomes... it sort of blows up and up and up until we've got a massive task on our hands, and I think that's what we did with Afro Ella.
Were you big fans of, like, the old blaxploitation films?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've grown up watching blaxploitation films, and I think they're hilarious. And obviously, like, we added our own sense of humour to Afro Ella, but we both sort of, we enjoy exploitation films in general, and we both love sci-fi, and we were massive fans, so both of those influences came for Afro Ella together in the end.
It's going to be a series, or just sort of a mini-series?
Well, initially we just committed to sort of 4 issues, because we didn't know how it was going to be received, or whether we'd be able to commit to it, because it's obviously it takes up so much of our time, and we're so new to it, we just had no idea. But now it's been quite... we've had so much great feedback, we definitely want to extend the series from... Yeah, instead of it just being 4, to being like a much longer series now. Hopefully monthly in the end.
And where can we find it online anywhere? Can we purchase it if we're not... we don't live in the UK like I live in New York. Can I find it anywhere?
We're on... Orbital Comics, which they have an online presence and they deliver digitally. You can order it from us on Big Cartel, but we've got a Sponsor Me pitch live at the moment where you can order sort of all 4 issues and posters, and we've got loads of amazing rewards on Sponsor Me if you'd like to help.
Is there a website they can go to check out samples or anything?
We've got a Tumblr blog.
chromatroncomics.tumblr.com.
And we are also on Twitter, and you can find us at Chromatron Comics, and also on Facebook as well. We're Afroella Chromatron Comics if you look on Facebook for us.
Obviously, Afroella has taken up a lot of your time, but anything else from Chromatron you might have coming out in the future?
Oh, we do. We've got
about three titles which were kind of ready to kind of roll out pretty soon.
Yeah, we've got three titles. One is
talk about?
Yeah, oh, we can. One of them is kind of zombie-centered. One's kind of a little bit more magical. Well, actually, two of those are a little bit more magical. And then we've got one that we started at the very, very beginning, which we didn't really ever make three pages of. But we want to put that, instead of it being a comic, we want to make it into a small book. So, and that's...
It's very British, though,
yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah, it's very... I'm not entirely sure that...
We're not sure it's too universal.
We don't know whether it's got a massively wide appeal, but we started with that, so we thought we'd make it into a little book.
Well, Afroella seems to, just looking at the drawings, has a very animated feel to it. Might there be any animation in the future, you think, or put on the website maybe? Or
we've done a few tests with the animation, only like 3-second snippets, but we're hoping to break down each book into four parts. Run it as like a little, on YouTube. And
yeah, we did it. We tried it already, and on our sponsor me pitch, we've got it on our YouTube channel as well. You can see that it's like there's only teeny weeny little snippets, but yeah, we do want to break it down, like we said, into four parts and have it as episodic. So they're really short episodes. I think they'll only be about 5-6 minutes long in the beginning anyway, and then hopefully a full-blown animation on Cartoon Network or Adult Swim.
We'll make some calls, don't worry.
In a couple months, that's what will happen.
Excellent. Well, it looks really great. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, so and next up, two more we're going to hear. Steve, I see it shows. He's so lovely to me, always very nice. Steve Tanner of Time Bomb Comics. They got some good stuff. I picked up one of the ones he had, one of the Dick Turpin comics they had about zombies. So I'm like, I must have it. Super nice guy. You always see him at shows. He always wears brightly colored coats.
So
I always want to sing like Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat to him, which I'm sure he gets all the time. But he's a really great guy, and Time Bomb Comics is putting out some good stuff. So here's Steve Tanner.
Here at KapowCon, and I'm at the Time Bomb Comics table with...
I'm Steve Tanner. I'm the publisher of Time Bomb Comics.
What is Time Bomb Comics? What do you guys got going on here, and what's happening?
Well, we're quite a small time outfit. We've been going now about 4.5 years. We specialise, all the comics we produce are self-contained. We only do one-shot or graphic novels. All our kind of books have we've been told they have a kind of British quirkiness to them. Which is something which we weren't originally aware of, but now we are aware of it. We're kind of playing up. Yeah, we're kind of playing up on it now. That's very much our USP now.
What are some of the titles you have out right now?
The most recent title we've got come out, it was a graphic novel called Kronos City, which is written by a guy called Andrew Crossgree, who's an Irish writer. And the artist is a guy called Alex Wilmore. And it's about a city through which runs a river of time. It's really quite an interesting idea, and I guess the closest thing I could describe it to in terms of style and tone is something which maybe Vertigo might publish in the United States. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely there is that Britishness to that title. The other thing we're really known for, certainly in the UK, is publishing comics featuring Dick Turpin, who was a highwayman who used to rob stagecoaches back in the 18th century. Around about 1730, 1740, that's when he was pretty much alive and well and doing his nefarious deeds. So
you're Jesse James, huh?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, the real Dick Turpin, I said he was a real figure, but the real Dick Turpin was a thoroughly unpleasant man. But the version we use of Dick Turpin is a slightly romanticised version. The first one we did was called Dick Turpin and the Restless Dead, where Dick Turpin fought a bunch of zombies.
Nice, I like that already.
Yeah, we followed that up with Dick Turpin and the Crimson Plague, where he's fighting a nest of vampire prostitutes in London. And people seem to really like the kind of style of comics that we do with them. You know, they're very much historical horror romps.
Can we get them over in the States?
You can get them in the States. Certainly you should be able to get Dick Turpin and the Crimson Plague through Diamond. But we offer mail order on our website, which is www.timebombcomics.com, and we ship anywhere in the world.
Oh, great. So you can get them anywhere. That's great. Awesome. And what's the next show for you going to be? What are you
gonna... The next show after this one, we're going to be up in Manchester in July. Okay. There's the MCM Expo in Manchester. But then after that, I think then it's going to be the... we have a bit of a recess in the summer. Unlike you guys, where all your conventions last through the summer, yeah, we're the opposite here. I guess because we don't have a summer. So
exactly, you know, yeah. Need a bit of a break.
So I think the next big show for us is going to be Thought Bubble in Leeds. I mean, we've done every Leeds Thought Bubble since they started. Each one has become bigger and better, and I really think it is the best comic show convention in the UK.
That's
by
what
far.
I keep hearing. We thought about going, but I just, boy, it's just not friendly to Americans to come over money wise. The exchange rate is so bad.
No, but Thought Bubble is great. I mean, Thought Bubble is a real celebration of comics. Yeah. That's how it feels.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter whether you're producing small hand-coloured stapled mini comics, mm-hmm. or you're one of the big boys that's producing hardcovers and graphic novels.
Yeah.
There's a place for you.
Yeah,
at
Lisa and Bill are just so great, and they know how to run a good show. So that's what I keep hearing. So awesome stuff. Again, with timebombcomics.com, can we find you anywhere online if people want to maybe follow
yes,
you?
Yes, I mean, yeah. I said we've got the website timebombcomics.com. Mm-hmm. We have a blog on there as well, which is updated, I guess intermittently would probably be the most appropriate phrase to use. But we've always got stuff going on. Our next release is going to be a Western book called The Last Ride of Henry Holden, which we're really looking forward to. And we're always on the lookout for submissions as well.
Excellent. You know, so do you have a submission policy?
Yeah, we do. It's on the website. It's very straightforward. It's really, really based around any submission should be just 5 pages long initially.
Okay.
Five sequential
pages.
Well,
the UK sensibility, does that mean us Yanks can't submit?
Oh, no. No, definitely can. As long as they you know, we're looking for these quirky kind of offbeat kind of concepts, really.
Okay.
The only thing we don't really want... demons and demon hunters,
okay.
because there's so many pictures for demons and demon hunters now,
yeah,
and
sure.
we watch Supernatural too, so we know where the idea comes from. So something really a bit more original is what we're looking for.
Oh, great, awesome. So go to timebombcomics.com, folks, and get your submissions in. Steve, thanks so much, man. Always great to see you.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve, so much. Always great to see you, sir. We're just gonna roll along right here for the final interview. This one was actually kind of funny how they got me on Saturday. Because I saw them at Bristol, and mm-hmm. I was interested because they had a really great table. And I just get a chance to come back to them. And then as I'm walking by, this is another thing I got to say I love about Kapow. And it's a little side note. Sorry, Neil, before I go into Neil Gibson of Twisted Dark. I like the fact that we had badges that said press. Mm-hmm. And they have names on them, the show we were attached to, or whatever publication we're attached to. Because so many smaller cons just give you like a little wristband or whatever, or the badge or the same thing. It's like, I like people to know that I'm press.
That's right.
Because then they'll pitch better, or maybe they'll try to be a little more chatty about it. Because they're going to try to sell. And then it backfires too, because then you get people, you know, just trying to like, you know, trying
suck,
to oversell
suck up
you.
To
you.
Know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, too, yeah. Suck up to me. I'm like, you know, I hate that. So it's so much.
Yeah.
That's the only reason Emma's talking to me right now, because I can sell some of her books. Otherwise, she's like, security, please call me. We'll move him when we're done, thanks. But I was walking by, and they were bright. They were big, like, on the lanyard, on the, what do you call it, the necklace part, I guess, of it. What do you call it, the lanyard? What would you call it? I don't know, the thing you put around your head.
Yeah,
but it said press all over it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So people saw it, that you were press. And so I'm literally kind of walking by his table because I knew I'd met the girl next to his table, Destiny Blue, who look her up. Great, fantastic anime art, manga style art. Mm-hmm. She does, no, not the sequential, but she does have prints in it. They're beautiful. Destiny Blue. Does. As I was chatting with her, and I was kind of walking by, he's like, hey, you press, you're press. And I was like, what? So he starts to get really nervous. And I'm like, let me come back tomorrow to talk to you. I got to run it off to somewhere else. So I did. I came back and we chatted a bit. He's very enthusiastic about his work. And then Twisted Dark are these anthologies that, you know, that sort of all tie together. Here is Neil Gibson.
KapowCon 2012, I'm at the Twisted Dark booth with...
Neil Gibson.
What is Twisted Dark?
I have no idea.
Okay, thank you very much, Neil. All right, great.
Twisted Dark's a series of short stories. They're all self-contained, kind of like a TV episode, where each episode is on its own, but they link to an overarching arc. All the characters meet each other, but the genre is psychological thriller. So if you like The Outer Limits or Tales of the Unexpected or The Twilight Zone, then this is for you.
And is it anthology, so it's a group of stories with different writers and artists? And
no, I write all the stories. Because,
oh, you do? Okay, great.
Because all the stories connect with each other.
I see.
So the idea is that you have to read all 8 volumes at least 2 or 3 times.
Ah.
Because then you figure out, oh, this is the father of this character. Oh, that's why he hates fire. That's why. While each story is self-contained and satisfying, when you can see the connections, because some are quite subtle, some are very obvious, you get a personal, oh, I get that, and it's a kind of a rewarding experience.
So is it just 3 volumes out right now?
3 volumes out right now. We've been going just a year this week. Okay. So we'll have the next few volumes out in a couple of months.
And like you said yesterday, you're like, oh, you could really pick up any volume and read it on its own.
Absolutely you can. I would suggest starting with volume 1 because the quality of writing and art improves as we go into long each way. We got a review. It's 5 stars from Comic Books, and they said that volume 3, it just keeps getting better and better. So.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Can we see any of this online?
Absolutely. Go to neilgibsoncomics.com. That's not melgibsoncomics.com.
Right, of course. Well, that's a different thing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm much better looking.
And those are really racist comics. So I wouldn't even go there. But, That's all right. Just get a mic in his face. It's okay, no problem.
So I'm dealing with these horrible customers. These fans bother me all the
people
time.
People actually want to buy things from you. What is that all about? So neilgibsoncomics.com. Are there samples up there people can check out?
Yeah, there are
samples
there. They can read the first issue of Tortured Life, which is my other series. It's an ongoing one with this rather pretty lady on front.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Can they purchase online as well?
They can indeed. They can go through Amazon in the US or Lulu. Okay. I would suggest Lulu.com because it's a high quality print.
Ah, excellent. Very good. And is there, besides your website, is there a Twisted Dark website or just go to your Neil Gibson?
Just go to neilgibsoncomics.com.
Are you on Twitter? Can they follow you? Because you want to
They can, but I tell you, I'm really boring. My stories are pretty good, but I don't understand Twitter. Oh, I had Frosties for breakfast today.
Then don't talk about your Frosties. Talk about, you know, talk about the person you just killed and where you chopped them up and put them. That's what I do. Wait. Crap. Oops.
I think maybe
new story for you.
I think you should be writing the stories.
Yeah,
just
exactly,
to talk.
Yeah. Well, they're just going to be the autobio, so. Well, Neil, thanks so much, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me.
You got it.
There we go. All right. Hey, let's just get a plug from our sponsor.
Dynamic Forces is the comic book and collectible industry's top producer of limited edition and autographed memorabilia, including books and lithographs. Check out their daily, weekly specials and contests at dynamicforces.com.
Awesome, Dynamic Forces, of course. Find us online. You want to drop us a line, let us know what you thought of these interviews, what's going on. ComicNewsInsiderYahoo.com. Call the hotline 212-501-6246 if you'd like to leave a message, and we'll play it on the show. Facebook.com/ComicNewsInsider. Hit the like button. Or just go to ComicNewsInsider.com and for all that info. And please go to iTunes if you want. Leave 5 stars, nothing but love, because you do. But if you don't be a dick. And, like, email us, all right? Just email us and say, you know what, I don't really like this about that. I like that. Let's start a conversation, because I've done that in the past. And people are like, oh, you know what, maybe I was a little harsh or whatever. No, I still hate you. That's fine. You know, I'm cool with that. But just, you know, let's talk. Let's hang out. And you can find me online, of course, jaquino.com, J-A-Q-U-I-N-O. And then I have a Tumblr, jimmyaquino.tumblr.com. I'm just at jimmyaquino on Twitter. I'm not going to friend you on Facebook. Sorry, I'm trying to make that more, you know, personal, people I know. So, where can they find you?
Okay, selfmadehero.com. And we're on Twitter, selfmadehero, and on Facebook as selfmadehero.
Oh, yeah. Are you on Twitter yourself?
Well, as a personal Twitter? No, I'm not.
Really? Why?
Well, I don't know.
I think you should do it. Let's start a Twitter account. We're going to start one right now. Here
we
go.
But if I start, it's that, I don't know.
Okay, Emma Haley, I'll have a Twitter account.
What?
I've set you up. There's pictures, everything. It's like, in your first tweet, I'm with Jimmy Aquino of Comic News Insider recording. selfmadehero.com, selfmadehero, that's all. You can check them out there. They can order on the site as well, right?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. All right, so please stay tuned later this week. This one's coming out tonight, Tuesday, so maybe Friday, I think Friday or Saturday, we'll put out the Self-Made Hero special. And do tune in for that, because there's so many great things, great people to talk to. Jake, Kate Brown, Anthony Hope Smith, Will Bingley, I.A.J. Colbert, and Dan Lockwood, one of the editors of the Lovecraft books. And Emma's going to stay on for that.
Yeah.
And we'll chat about that. So tune in for that one. Thanks, everybody, for listening, as usual. Really appreciate it. Send in a list on what you think of this. And I got more cons coming up. Heroes Con in North Carolina in June. Big San Diego. I tried to do Baltimore, and of course New York in October. Are you going to be over anytime soon?
I'm hoping to be, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. One of our authors is going to be at SPX. And so.
Oh, yeah, SPX is great.
Yeah, it's good. Glyn Dillon, and the book's called Now Brown.
Yeah, because I missed the last two SPXs, so I was thinking of trying to go to that one this year. Maybe I'll be there as well. Cool.
Yeah, awesome.
People will talk. but thanks so much for co-hosting. Really appreciate it. You're lovely.
Thank you so much, Jimmy, for
people have
me.
Missed you since 400.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, when is she going to be back on? She's so awesome. Love it. All right, we're getting out of here. Hey, this is Jimmy Aquino and
Emma Haley.
And this is Comic News Insider.